Well, here we are for our culture segment, and today we have one of our own. In fact, he's the clinical director here at Focus on the Family in our counseling department. His name is Tim Sanford. Hey, Tim. Good to have you here.
Good to be here, Lisa.
Well, you have been here before on the show, usually for our inbox segment, because we pull you in to answer questions about various things. And but we wanted to bring you in for the culture this time because you have written a book titled Forgive for Real, Six Steps to Forgiving. And we've talked kind of some about this issue on the show. It's a little bit with you. And we figured, we want to really go into this because I think this is something that everyone wishes they understood more about, that they understood biblically, that they understood practically, but we all seem to like think we know bits and pieces of it, but we're not really great at applying this, and it ends up being just descending into chaos, and we have bad relationships as a result. So we're going to actually do 2 weeks here on forgiveness, talking through the principles of your book, and so I'm looking forward to jumping in. And so I want to actually start out really with you kind of helping us figure out a couple things as we start the conversation. The first being, and this is actually kind of your first chapter, how you open the book, why is forgiveness important? Now, we know it's biblical. We know, you know, Jesus, Sunday school answer. But why do we need to forgive?
Well, there's two major reasons why we forgive, because forgiving is, first of all, a spiritual element to it. It's also has a psychological element to it as well. So it's both categories. And there's two key reasons. The first reason is if you don't forgive, that keeps you connected to that person and to the wrong forever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever and ever. So you're constantly connected to them, which means you can't heal. The word picture that comes into my mind is when you got wronged, they dumped a suitcase in your lap. And then you carry this suitcase through life, and then somebody else wrongs you, so they dump you another suitcase. And before you know it, you're walking through the airport with 15 suitcases. Life gets hard to manage that way, and you can't heal. So the first reason is so that you can be free from them and so that you can heal. The second reason is if you don't, you end up playing judge and debt collector, and you're, in a sense, whether you know it or not, you're trying to play God. Mm-hmm. And that's not a good place to be.
Yeah. I like what you said. I think it was somewhere early on where you talk about this assumed power in not forgiving. Like that's actually a good position for you to be in, but it's actually a very detrimental one.
Well, and yes, because a lot of times we think if I forgive, again, back to the misunderstandings, then I mean everything's okay. It wasn't that big a deal. Mm-hmm. And then I'm not going to keep myself safe because then I have to like them. I have to do this. I have to do that. So it puts me in jeopardy. And so by not forgiving, it gives me the illusion that I'm keeping myself strong and I'm keeping myself safe.
Yeah.
That's just an illusion, though, Lisa. It's not real.
Yeah. Well, it actually brings to mind something else that I think we need to define before we get going here. And that is what really is a wrong and what is not a wrong against you. Because I think, you know, there's some, it's easy for me to be like, yeah, you know, this person and I, we just rub each other the wrong way. You know, there has to be some major forgiveness that goes on here or whatever. Tell us what we're actually going to be talking here about when we're talking about wrongs done against you.
Well, when you think of a wrong, think of a courtroom situation, because in a sense, forgiving is a court of law event. If I forget my wife's birthday, that's very dumb and wrong and stupid. That's not good for the relationship. We don't go to court over it, though. Hmm. It's not a wrong. So a wrong is either a civil law that was broken or one of God's moral laws that were broken. Forgetting a birthday does not break a law.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
Being late to this radio broadcast is not a wrong. It's not good. And I need to deal with it and correct me with that. But we don't go to court over it. Mm-hmm. So it's a very specific infraction of a moral law of God's or a civil wrong that was broken.
Okay. And I like to, and I want you to add some clarity to this. You talk about being the person who was wronged. And in that kind of the mindset for that person, there is a difference between being victimized and being a victim. Explain to us that too, before we go any further.
Yes. Being victimized is I'm me, I'm Tim, and a wrong happened to me. I'm me. This is the wrong that happened. We're two separate things. Being a victim or that victim mindset, victim mentality is I take that on as my identity. That wrong, that infraction, the brokenness now becomes me. And that's my identity. So there's no separation between Tim and the wrong. And then I just wear it as, in a sense, as a badge, either for protection or a badge of pride or something. It becomes me. I become it. And I lose the real Tim.
Okay. Now, I like you alluded to the courtroom analogy, and I like that because you walk through that kind of in this portion of the book, talking about this as a legal transaction, and there is a debt here, there is a debt that has to be collected. We need to unpack that a little bit because I think that can seem a little nebulous to people when they're like, okay, wait a minute, what? How does that? They just feel bad. Whatever happened to them, they're just like, I'm just mad, and I want some kind of justice, but I don't know what this looks like. So help us understand like the pieces of this puzzle as it moves forward in what you're saying is actually a legal transaction.
Let me back up just a little bit, and here's what we normally do. We put forgive, reconcile, confront, make everything better and live happy ever after into a blender, make a Christian smoothie out of it, and make it all nicey-nicey. And it's not that way. We need to look at each individual topic separately. They are connected yet separate. And that's what makes it so confusing. So forgiving is that court of law event. And there's three key components to it. Number one, what wrong happened? Number two, with a wrong that's happened, there's a debt that is owed. And then number three, who becomes then the debt collector of that? If you notice in the court of law, we don't really deal with emotions and feelings. They're real. They don't become a part of forgiving. And forgiving in a court of law is not designed to fix the relationship either. That's restoration. That's a separate topic. So when we break it down, forgiving is the courtroom only. What wrong happened? What is thou the debt? And who becomes the debt collector?
Okay. So what about in an instance, because again, I mean, the nice thing about legal proceedings in a court is that someone is there arbitrating in the sense of someone is going to be declared the guilty party. But if you're in a relationship with someone and they're completely unwilling or unable to admit fault or admit anything, then where does this debt go? What does it look like if no one's taking responsibility for it?
Okay, and let's make up a situation here, Lisa. Let's say you go out in the parking lot and break out my windshield.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do it for real, please. Okay, but let's use this as an example. Okay, we go down to the city hall. They don't care whether you like me or don't like me, or whether I like you or don't like you, or we have matching colors or not. All they care about is what, in this case, civil law was broken. Destruction of private property, there's the law that was broken. Step two then is now Lisa owes me a new windshield. You didn't decide that. I didn't decide that. The judge decided it. So either in a legal proceeding, the judge is supposed to, or in a spiritual situation, God is the judge that declares this wrong happened. Hmm. And now here's the debt. You owe me a new windshield.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that has nothing to do with whether you agree with it or not. You can deny it all you want to. The judge declared you broke Tim's windshield. You owe him a new windshield. The third part then of who becomes a debt collector now is my choice. I can keep that debt and go, Lisa, you pay me, Lisa, you pay me, and follow you around for the next 45 years trying to get you to pay. Do you see how I'm not free to heal because I'm still connected to it?
Mm-hmm.
Or I can give it to God. Mm. That sounds easy and nice. It's not, because now all the why God questions come up. Does God really care? Does it matter to him? Do I matter to God really? Is he just going to sweep it under a cloud and make everything nicey-nicey? No, God is a just and holy God. Every wrong must be righted somehow, somewhere, someplace. So if I give my debt-collecting job to God, now it's between God and Lisa. Because I go up to the judge and go, Your Honor, I forgive Lisa the debt of a new windshield. He drops the gavel, case closed, done over with. Now, when I walk out of the courtroom, have some mechanically inclined angels fix my windshield for me? No, no, that doesn't happen here in Colorado, at least, no. Mm-hmm. And I'm the one then that absorbs the damage, not the fault or mm-hmm. the blame. You hear the difference. I pay to get my windshield fixed. It cost me time. It cost me money. I pay to get, and that's part of the very definition of forgive. I absorb the damage.
Mm.
So whether you ever agreed, whether you ever admitted or not, and that's where, again, a court of law, an outside superior being, whether it be a judge or God, declared, yes, it was wrong. Yes, you did it. Yes, you owed him. And then now it becomes my choice to who becomes a debt collector, me or I give it to God.
Okay. I think a lot of times this seems to be a pretty realistic scenario where sometimes we're in a situation where wrong has been done against us and we do get an apology. But again, this whole definition of an apology, like a lot of times people are like, okay, the one thing I need to do is I'm just going to say something because I need to smooth this over, or I want to preserve the relationship, or this person, you know, I have to exist with this person. So let's try to make this go away. So I'm going to say what is necessary to make this go away. How can a discerning person, because again, if that really wasn't apologized for, at some point this is going to fester and rankle and whatever. What does the party do when to, one, discern, has an apology been issued? And if it hasn't, moving on forward from that.
Okay. Because an apology, in a court of law terms, we call it a confession. And there's five parts to it. So Lisa would say to me, I, Lisa, number one, broke your windshield. It was wrong. I did it against you and it hurt you. There's the apology. By the way, that's also the definition of reconcile. Reconcile doesn't mean to fix anything. That's restoration. See, back to our technical terms, let's keep them accurate and separate here, Lisa. Reconcile simply means to say the same thing. Mm-hmm. I say, Lisa broke my windshield, and then Lisa says, yes, Tim, I broke your windshield. We're reconciled. We're not buddy buddies yet.
Yeah.
Okay, that's restore, and that's if you're trustworthy, but that's reconcile, and that's all reconcile is. Yep. So that's what an apology, the I'm sorry, or if I hurt you, I'm sorry, or, well, I didn't mean to, none of that.
I'm sorry you feel that I...
Yes. Mm-hmm. All that's just a bunch of baloney that doesn't go anywhere and doesn't really help you to heal.
Yeah. Can you tell us, you actually share in the book a story about someone named Angie who you counseled after literally her father gave her a black eye over bad grades. Walk us through kind of that and how you helped her practically apply some of these principles. Because again, this is a close relationship. This is something that clearly, evidentially was done against her. What kind of place did you have to get her to? What was she wrestling with in this whole process?
It was a Christian family, and so the biggest thing that I had to do is separate all these non-accurate beliefs we have about forgiving. Okay, so I started through the court of law process. What went wrong? Well, hitting Angie in the eye is wrong. Okay, civil law, but it's also God's moral law. Mm-hmm. For a father to hit their daughter in the face, that's wrong. Okay, there it is. What is the debt that is owed? Well, in this case, it was a confession, or we would call it an apology. And then sometimes it's also anything that I can legitimately do to make amends. So whether it's pay for a windshield, or in this case, they were paying for therapy that she needed. So that was what was needed. It never happened in the story of Angie. And that's where I can forgive even though the other person never confesses. I can give that debt collecting job over to God, whether you admit it or whether you confess or not, because that's not your choice. That's my choice. Yes, it was wrong. In God's court, there's a document. It's written forever. It was wrong. It's not my imagination. It's not my hopes. Yes, you owe me this confession. Whether I collect or not, it's still what you owe me. And that's now between you and God. I can then hand that over to God, be free from it, and then begin to heal. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean I trust you or like you, which is a whole nother separate topic that we need to keep separate.
Yeah. And we're going to actually get into that next week and really talk about, is there even hope for restoring an actual relationship and building trust again. But I do want to go back and talk a little bit about the timeline. I mean, again, when we talk about it like this and we're not, Although I noticed that you very conveniently made me the perp in the windshield story, but I'm actually going to forgive you for that, Tim.
Well, thank you.
Looking back at, let's talk about a timeline for healing, because it makes it sound like, okay, you know, so what I did was I took the suitcase and I put it on God, and now I'm just going to like be all hunky dory. And I think of like where I would play this out. This would happen after I would gripe at a number of friends and other people about how horrible this person was to me and whatever. And it seems like there's so much sinful behavior that we can get caught up in when we're looking for healing. What's kind of the cleanest, best way to get to healing without getting caught in all the entrapment of, you know, fault finding and what actually was said and done?
And it depends a lot of times, too, on the amount of hurt and damage that's happened. Mm-hmm. If, you know, if a teenager steals $10 from their parent, well, that's not too hard to forgive. It's 10 bucks. Mm-hmm. Okay. If the parent sexually abuses the teenager for 3 years of their teenage life, that's a whole lot bigger deal. And it may take days, weeks, months, years to go through the entire court process. And that's why, you know, the workbook pages are such that it may take a while. It may take a while to actually nitty gritty get down and say what wrong really happened. I was talking with one missionary kid just a few years ago on this, mm-hmm. and dad was always busy with the ministry of missionary work. And I said, okay, is being too busy a moral wrong? No. Mm-hmm. And they looked at me and went, well, but I said, mm-hmm. but there's something here. We got to find the wordage that fits. Neglecting your parental duties to your children. Ah, there's the moral wrong. Mm-hmm. To not be the father that your children needed because your number one job description as a dad is to be a dad. There's the wrong. Mm-hmm. So we need, and sometimes it takes a while because we want to add sometimes a lot of things onto the wrong list that aren't really wrongs. Like you forgot my birthday and mm-hmm. you were late and you said something that hurt my feelings. Let me take a quick caveat. You can be hurt and hurt deeply even though nothing wrong happened. Mm-hmm. Back to my, if I forgot my wife's birthday, she may feel really hurt. That's legitimate. Mm-hmm. I didn't do a wrong. It was very, very foolish though. Mm-hmm. And very insensitive of me. And so, yes, we need to work through the relationship part. So just because I'm hurt doesn't mean a wrong happened. And we need to keep those separate too. But the bigger the hurt, sometimes the harder it is to really wrestle through. I mean, in the case of, I work a lot with deep trauma. And so I've worked with a number of children who were sexually molested for years as their childhood. How do you just forgive that? Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of repeated wrongs. There were lies. There were deceptions. There was the abuse itself. There was a lot of other things. So that list of wrongs sometimes gets pretty long. Mm-hmm. And I've seen two or three pages, single spaced, of a person working through the wrongs done against them. Mm-hmm. So it may take a while. And then comes the why God questions or does God care questions. That may take a week, a month, 2 or 3 months. Because it's big enough and important enough to God, I don't want to just go, oh, okay, God will take care of it. Mm-hmm. Who is this God I'm really giving this list to? Mm-hmm. Because this is way too dear and way too important just to hand it to anybody.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because often in that kind of scenario, you know, it's not just, there's not, it's not a clean cut where there's just one person involved in this. Like I've, you know, talked to many people where if sexual abuse was involved, you know, there was the perpetrator of the abuse, but then sometimes maybe there was another close family member who dismissed it.
Exactly.
Or who was not an advocate or who, and then all of a sudden there's trust there broken and there's a lot of, I mean, and all of a sudden you're wondering, here I am in my family of origin or the people who are known, supposed to love me, and I feel least safe around them.
And I've heard that time and time again where, yes, and so I have one list of the wrongs that father did against me, let's say. I have another list of what mother did against me or the neglect of what mother did not do. And so I'm in two different courts for each person, and I need to work through each one, forgive father for these, forgive mother for these. And that can take a long time to sort out and figure out. And then sometimes I'm not ready yet to let go of it because it still is kind of hurt and angry and sore. Yeah. And like I tell people, it has to be heart time. It has to be real. Mm-hmm. I was taking one call here at Focus on the Family, and it was a situation where the husband had been unfaithful, and the wife said, well, yeah, that was a week ago, but I've forgiven him. Mm. And the natural bluntness that in me as a therapist came out and go, why? Mm-hmm. Not because it wasn't the right thing to do, but she obviously was playing the game of trying to be the nicey-nicey Christian answer. She hasn't worked through the whole forgiving process yet. Mm-hmm. Not with that big of a deal.
Yeah. Almost it would have been better to say, and I'm trying to start the process of forgiving him, or I'm determining that I'm going to forgive him. So that's good.
That's where I'm going to end up. I'm not there yet.
Yeah. Well, meanwhile, if you want to get a copy of the book, and quite frankly, just get it and read it before next week's second half of this, the title is Forgive for Real. We've been talking with Tim Sanford. Go to boundless.org, go to this episode, which is 627, and you will see the resource there. You can click on it for a gift of any amount to Boundless. We would love to send you this book. And so it's very easy to do. You're going to give a gift. That's all awesome. We're going to give you a book as our thank you to you.